This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. Sword and Laser Podcast, episode number 31. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
How's it going, Tom? Tom has turned over a new life leaf.
I did. I found a big life leaf. And I flipped it over.
You flipped that puppy over, and there were tons of disgusting bugs.
All those little roly-polies.
So why don't you fill in our audience about what's going on right now?
Yeah, I mean, if they don't know, the quick version is that I have left CNET.com, which was my previous full-time employer, and I am moving on to do a bunch of independent stuff. Most importantly, working for Leah Laporte's Twit Network, doing a bunch of shows.
Wait. Most importantly? Well, no, I'm sorry. I think dedicating more time to the Sword and Laser podcast is definitely the most important thing you should be doing right now.
You're right. I worded that poorly. I meant most predominantly because that was taking up the most of my time.
That's better.
Yeah.
So you're going to be doing a new show called Tech News Today?
Yeah, Tech News Today starts June 1st. It'll be every day at 5:30 p.m. Eastern, 2:30 Pacific. So you can listen live in your car on the East Coast because the Twit app works on Android, iPhone, iPad, so you can just stream it along and listen on your drive home, or it'll also be podcast.
That's awesome. And well, I guess we should get started with the show. I mean, we've got a lot coming up on this episode. We are finishing the book.
Yes, you finally finished The Wind-Up Girl.
You know, I actually finished it like 3 weeks ago.
It just took us this long.
It just took us this long to find time. Yes, I finished The Wind-Up Girl, and we're starting a new book, and there's just a lot in the news this week.
Yeah. So let's get started with some sad news. The artist Frank Frazetta, who is best known for his paperback covers. If you are an aficionado of science fiction paperback covers, as I am, you are familiar with Frank Frazetta's work, whether you know it or not. Mm-hmm. In fact, as Boing Boing's Mark Frauenfelder put it, sometimes his art was better than the stories themselves. Anyway, he died on May 10th. He was 82 years old, so he lived a very long life. But we are sad to see him go.
Yeah, that is really sad. I mean, he had a lot of very, very gritty, very sexualized, very intense pieces of art in a lot of his works.
Yeah, a lot of times not necessarily emblematic of the story, but capturing the spirit of it, if you know what I mean. That a lot of people have complained, the few people who have complained about Frazetta will be like, well, the story wasn't anything about a chick in a tight costume and a rocket. And it's like, yeah, but the exploration, the feel of space totally reflected what that story was about.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then we also have the Nebula Award winners for this year. And some exciting news. The novel winner for this year was Paolo Bacigalupi for The Wind-Up Girl.
So whatever we or you think of it, it won.
It won.
Okay, it won a Nebula Award. Grand Master Award went to Joe Haldeman. Short story winner was Spar by Kidge Johnson. Novelette winner, Sinner Baker Fabulous Priest. Red Mask, Black Mask, Gentleman Beast by Yuji Foster, which is pretty fun to say.
Yeah.
Novella winner, The Women of Neil Gwynn's by Cage Baker. And the Bradbury Award for Best Dramatic Production, District 9.
Awesome.
By Neil Blomkamp and Terry Tatchell.
And in case anyone has forgotten, Joe Haldeman was the writer of The Forever War.
Right, which we read
previously.
If you're a longtime Sword and Laser listener.
Yes, long time. That was one of our early picks, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's been about a year-ish, maybe? Yeah.
A year ago or so?
Yeah.
You know what I think is funny? So we have some Game of Thrones news this month as well, and we could just do a whole podcast on George R.R. Martin and the stuff he says.
Did you read this interview?
Yeah.
In the Chicago Tribune, they got to sit down with George R.R. Martin. He makes the usual excuses and apologies for not having finished.
For not being our bitch.
A Dance with Dragons. he says he is working with it on it. He will get it done. And the funniest thing I thought in that whole topic was he said, I will announce that it is done as soon as it is done on my live journal, which hilariously he has a live journal.
I know. It's so
called
cute.
Not a blog. And he's like, people don't believe me. They think they're going to divine some kind of Delphic oracle-like way of finding out that I've finished it without admitting it. He's like, look, I will post it there as soon as it's done. I promise.
I know. It's not like he doesn't want people to know when he's going to be done.
Well, let's
do you think
look.
He wants people
it's
complaining
done,
at him all the time?
Right now.
Check the blog quickly.
No. Last post, May 11th.
Sorry. Damn. Well, some interesting news. They're recasting a few roles for the HBO series, including the one of Daenerys. She's being recast, and Tamsin Merchant will not play the role in the series. They're picking some new people. Jennifer Ely also dropped out of the project. Michelle Fairley has also taken over the role of noblewoman Catelyn Stark. So there's a lot of shakeup. In the production
still,
right now.
They're still doing a lot of casting right now, but George R.R. Martin says that that's normal. He's written for TV before. This is all going to be good. And they're hoping that Game of Thrones can do for fantasy what Battlestar Galactica did for sci-fi.
Oh, that's, you know, I can definitely see that happening. If it's anywhere near as gritty as some series like Rome were,
yeah.
And I think it can pull in a whole different kind of audience. And yeah, just look at Battlestar Galactica. I mean, tons of people who weren't into sci-fi watched that show.
Yes. These are the folks that did Deadwood, right, that are working on Game of Thrones. So it has every promise of that happening. And you've got an incredible story to work with. They're including George R.R. Martin in the production. I mean, he's not on set or anything, but he says he talks
he
to
He has
them
been right on here. Set, though.
And he's not on set all the time.
No.
You're right, he has been.
And he's working on the 8th script now. I think the first season has 10 episodes, and he's writing the script right now for the 8th episode.
Episode 8, right.
That's so exciting. I want to read them.
I want to see them. I can't wait for this thing to premiere, finally.
It's too far away.
Winter-is-coming.net is probably your best place to go online to find out the very latest on the Game of Thrones, because they're essentially entirely about news and rumors about HBO's Game of Thrones. The post that I found most interesting was last Friday, where they posted some of the audition videos. These are people that didn't necessarily get the parts, but they have a video of Irish soap actress Bronagh Waugh, who looks to be reading for the part of Doria, despite the video saying otherwise. They have Amy Joyce Hastings also reading for Doria, and Cassie Howarth reading for the role of Dany.
Yeah, and they're also looking at people who could possibly play Varys, or Varys, depending on how you say it in your brain when you read. Stephen Fry?
Yeah. Stephen Fry and Rowan Atkinson? They have both worked together a lot. They're both buffoons in the best sense.
Mm-hmm.
They are both huge comedy actors in the UK. So I don't know. But, you know, somehow Rowan Atkinson could be good for Varys because of the brooding sense that he can bring to something.
Mm-hmm.
And Stephen Fry sort of fits the part in looks.
I also like David Bamber, who's also trying out for the role. He played Cicero in Rome, and he was excellent.
Yeah, so he's got some experience then
yeah.
in that sort of role. And another veteran character actor, Timothy Spall, who was Peter Pettigrew in the Harry Potter films. I don't know. He's a little rat-like. Maybe that's just because I saw him in Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm. I know. You have to kind of make that disconnect.
Looks the most like Varys, though, of all of these guys.
In your mind?
Well, if you compare the illustration.
Ah, that's true.
Posting to
yeah, where did that illustration come from?
It looks like they drew Timothy Spall's where that it looks.
Oh, it's just a fan art from DeviantArt. You can't base it on fan art.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's not fair.
Is that not far from how you expect?
Yeah, pretty close. Pretty close. You're right.
I don't think Stephen Fry is right for this. Rowan Atkinson's a stretch, but maybe I could see it. I would go with Spall or Bamber.
Yeah. So we have a new sponsor for the show this time around. Our sponsor for this month and hopefully in the future is Audible.com.
If you've never heard about them, they're the internet's leading provider of audiobooks. And if you haven't heard about them, you probably don't listen to a lot of podcasts. They have more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, featuring audio versions of bestsellers, New York Times bestsellers. And for listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. And it's perfect for Sword and Laser because y'all are reading all the time. Whether you're reading our choice of the time or whether you're grabbing something else to fill in or whatever, this is a chance for you to read an audiobook for free. And you've got one picked out.
I do. And this is very timely because it's not only one of my favorite authors, but also one of my favorite narrators that I'm currently listening to. And it's His Majesty's Dragon. It's Temeraire Book One by Naomi Novik. And it's narrated by Simon Vance, who has done a lot of sci-fi fantasy work in the past. And he's also reading The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and the other books in the Millennium series, which is just fantastic. So if you've never heard him speak before, you know, check out this book. It's a book I've recommended in the past, and also check out The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Both dragon related, but not really.
So there you go. There's a couple of choices for you. You get one for free. All you got to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/sword, S-W-O-R-D, audiblepodcast.com/sword. You sign up. Get your free audiobook. You can choose one of the ones Veronica recommended or any one you want, really. And then if you like it, keep subscribing to Audible and keep reading books that way.
I've been a huge Audible fan for years now, and I always use my credits. I've got the gold membership.
Oh, yeah.
And I use them up every month, definitely.
Cool. So there you go, audiblepodcast.com/sword.
So now it's time to do our wrap-up for The Wind-Up Girl by Paolo Bacigalupi, Nebula Award winner.
I almost remember reading this book. I think I finished it sometime in February. No, it hasn't been that long, but it has been a bit since I read it. What's striking me most right now is the red shirt protests that are going on in Thailand.
I know.
And they've been going on for about a month. And it caught my eye when they first started to put the news because of the red shirt in the headline. I was like, oh my gosh, that's like truth. It's like science fiction come to life. Mm-hmm. It's very sad that it's real and that it's happening and that they're having that trouble. But I felt a little more attached to that story after reading this book. Did you?
Yeah, well, it's obviously based on actual political events and parties and situations that are happening in Thailand. And yeah, I noticed that in the news as well. I was like, oh, that's not just a device that he was using in the story. Yeah. That's actually something that happens there. And I found that pretty fascinating as well. The book overall, I'm glad I finished it. I didn't love it as much as I wanted to.
I wouldn't L-O-V-E. I liked it a lot, though. And mm-hmm. and it took me, I can't remember exactly the page numbers, 80 or 90 pages before it really caught me and pulled me in. But once it got me in, I really enjoyed it. I really liked the character of, the head of the white shirt's security.
JD.
Yeah, JD. I really liked the interplay between him and his assistant, and I really liked the way her character grew. I definitely liked the wind-up girl, Emiko.
Emiko.
Because her character was the most futuristic, the most sci-fi of the book. And I thought also well-written, and I think that's why some people didn't like her, because she had a very alien personality to mm-hmm. me, which is right. Her personality should be different. It should be alien, and it should think differently. And she had these two tracks going in her mind, like a programmed track and then sort of a natural track that would bubble up. And you could see that that programmed track was actually put in there to keep her natural instincts from coming to the fore, or she would turn into a killing machine, which eventually we saw.
Yeah, I had a hard time connecting with her. I don't know if it's because of her very nature. I've never had a problem relating to anyone who was part android or cyber human.
All your friends who are part android. Yeah.
But for some reason, I didn't feel like I ever made that connection where I felt extremely sympathetic towards her. Like I did, but I didn't. There wasn't that emotional connection there that I was hoping for. In fact, weirdly, I don't know what this says about me, but the person who I felt the most sympathetic for was Anderson Lake.
Really?
Yeah.
The gaijin, or what did they call him?
What's the word?
Yes.
Oh, I talked about this on Goodreads also about...
Yeah, there was a long thread about whether the foreign words that were left in threw people off or not. They didn't throw me off at all. I'm very good at using the context to kind of divine what a word is about. And if I don't understand it, it doesn't bother me. I sort of feel like I'll pick it up as I go along. And I did with all of these. That word in particular that meant foreigner, I got that right away.
Well, I got that that's what it meant, but... Other words, I started that thread.
Yeah, no, <I'm... laughs>
and I did have a lot of trouble picking up a lot of the foreign word usage in the book. For me, it actually pulled me out of the text because there was no kind of glossary and there was no kind of dictionary within the book. And so I couldn't even like at least look once and then pick it up and not have to think about it again.
It's kind of, and I could see where that would happen. It's kind of like listening to a pidgin English or a Creole or something.
Farang.
Farang
is the word.
So it's like listening to one of those where they throw in borrowed words from other languages, and you kind of, some people, when they hear that, they're like, I haven't a clue what this person is saying. Other people are able to just kind of pick through the trash and pull out enough words that they can tell what's going on. And so, yeah, I can see where that would knock you out. It didn't for me. And because of that, it lent to the authenticity of it. I felt like, okay, I'm really being pulled into feeling like I'm in Bangkok.
Mm-hmm. I can understand that for sure. For some reason, for whatever reason, this book more than others, it distracted me more than making it feel like pulling me into the story world.
Now, what did you think of the world itself, of this idea that we've passed peak oil, there's not enough electricity, you can't fly anymore, there just isn't any gasoline to fuel jets, so everything has to come by ship. A lot of the electricity that we have is done by these, you know, mammoth-like things, and we're having to really genetically manipulate our food to have enough calories to feed the world.
I liked the world that he created because it felt like a very possible alternate world to me. You know, it seemed like the way he set everything up, it was like, wow, that could actually happen in that way. We could get to that point if certain things kept happening in our current society. And it was kind of unclear whether this was an alternate history or an alternate world or if it was our world just set in the future.
Yeah, it seemed to me like it was our world set in the not too distant future, but he never made that clear. And I kind of
super distant future, I felt, because it was to the point where they almost didn't even remember dogs.
Oh,
that dogs had existed.
Yeah, so
you
maybe it's like an 80-year like the first crisis maybe in the not too distant future, but now we're living in the long after effects of it.
Yeah. So going back to Anderson, I'm not sure why I felt so connected to Anderson. In fact, it makes me feel kind of weird that I connected with him when there were all these other characters that I should have felt more sympathetic for.
Farang lover.
I know, you know, and like it makes me feel that way. But he seemed like he genuinely cared at least about what happened to Emiko.
He was
in spite of himself. In spite of himself.
I was going to say he is immoral, not amoral. Which I think, in other words, immoral in that he has a moral compass that he violates sometimes. But with Emiko, it kind of got through to him, and it touched him, and he felt like he had to help.
Yeah,
he was a good guy in a bad circumstance. Maybe is that how you felt about him?
I guess so. Yeah, and Jaidi was definitely one of my favorites as well. Jaidi, I wish I knew how to pronounce a name. See, they need a glossary to tell us these things.
Or a pronunciation guide, yeah.
A pronunciation guide.
I just said JD.
JD.
Maybe
all right, we'll say that.
Anglicized, I don't know.
Yeah. He was definitely my favorite. I loved how he kind of kept coming back to
Yeah. I was happy
haunt.
When he came back. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're definitely giving some spoilers. Hopefully you have read the book by now.
This is, after all, the wrap-up.
Yes.
Wind Up Girls. You had to assume going in.
I mean, his story was so tragic, the way he lost his entire family through this ordeal. And then he just kind of comes back to help Kanya, even though she is, you know, part traitor and doesn't really understand which side she holds allegiance to.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Overall, I enjoyed the book. I definitely respected it for its writing. I think Paolo Bacigalupi is an excellent writer, an excellent story weaver, and he did his homework on not only the history of the world he wanted to write about, but the technology. I know some of our readers in the Goodreads forums had some issues with the Spring technology.
Yeah, and Bacigalupi has said, look, you know what? I didn't do a bunch of research to figure out, like, what would be the real thing that would happen. I just wanted to write about a world where you didn't have access to all the energy that we have now, and mm-hmm. what would you do? And I came up with the Spring as a MacGuffin. You know, it's just, it's not that kind of book. It's not that kind of Arthur C. Clarke science fiction. And he's like, I hope you can forgive me.
Now, there were some very, very graphic, disturbing portions of the book. And some of the readers took exception to that, like Lepton in the forums created a thread called Cannot Finish, Will Not Finish.
Oh,
and when I saw that, I was like, oh man, this is going to be a good one. And it was. I mean, he or she definitely has a point of view on this aspect, and that's that, is this good writing? Is this supposed to be entertaining, or is this exploitation and pornographic voyeurism?
Well, and you could say that about any book that has some sort of rape or pornographic or exploitation scene in it. Mm-hmm. And if I'm reading Lepton right, and maybe I'm not, his or her objection is not that that scene existed, but that this writer could have gone any way he wanted, and he's just fed up with dystopian post-apocalyptic future.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sounds like this just is the wrong book for him to begin with.
Right.
Because, you know, if you're just fed up with the entire premise of the post-apocalyptic future, then you're not going to like this book. And yeah, maybe there are too many of these written, but maybe that's because we tend to enjoy those kinds of books more than we enjoy the positive ones, because the positive ones can be boring.
I can't even really think of a book I've read lately that had a positive future. I mean, I'm kind of coming off of The Wind-Up Girl and Oryx and Crake and Perdido Street Station. And they're all, you know, kind of dystopian futures, although Perdido is kind of more of an alternate reality kind of situation. But they have that kind of, like, this world has gone on for so long that things just are not working the way they should.
Yeah, I mean, I could think of some Orson Scott Card and later Ender's Game where it's mostly utopian, but of course there's a secret underbelly. There's always something that's going wrong, and you know, so it's all in the balance, and you've always got to have something going wrong, or you have no conflict and you have no story.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of, you know, the kind of person who would really like Star Trek: The Next Generation. Because that's the utopian future where the conflict has to come from somewhere else. It can't come from the society. And I think that's fair to say, like, hey, you know what? This just isn't for me. I am tired of these books. I want to see a more positive future, even if it's not 100% pure. But I don't think this that you can discount Bacigalupi as just being voyeurism, as being pornographic voyeurism. This is a real thing that happens, sadly mm-hmm. and tragically. And if you're going to write a sad and tragic story, you can't polish it up or it'll just be shallow.
And Jenny even wrote also on that same thread, the whole point of showing Emiko being victimized is to demonstrate the status she has in Thai society. The immigrants are also killed at a moment's notice and can't safely travel the streets. It's a commentary on what happens when society collapses because of bad choices we've made for survival.
Now, Philip pointed out that that could have been accomplished without being so explicit. But again, if you're not explicit, is it really hitting home how bad it is? Are you doing a disservice to the tragedy if you aren't as explicit? If you whitewash it a bit.
If you candy coat it, does it really have the same effect on the reader? Very interesting.
But no doubt that they were shocking and difficult to read. I agree.
Mm-hmm. And Josh had a lot to say on that matter as well, Jay Lawrence. So moving on from the book, I just wanted to wrap it up for final look on it. How do you feel about it overall? Is it something you would recommend to other readers?
This is the kind of book where I would not just blanket recommend. I wouldn't just say, like, oh, you have to read The Wind-Up Girl. it would depend on what kind of reader I'm talking about. It would have to be somebody who's into something a little off the wall, isn't a literalist when it comes to science fiction, and is patient enough to get to the good part. But I think if you meet those criteria, it's an enjoyable book. I think the writing is good, and I think it is worth a recommendation.
Was that a Django in the background?
Yes. Did you hear that?
I did. She wanted to hear about the books, too.
She was giving her positive review as well.
Excellent. Well, we have another thread about a book that I just picked up as well, called The Blade Itself. And this thread was started by Vance, and he says, based on a recommendation here, thanks, Sean, I just picked up The Blade Itself, a dark action fantasy that has garnered a lot of praise. I was wondering who here has read it and what they thought about it.
Another dark action fantasy. Why can't we have light action? Oh, I'm just kidding.
I have a feeling this one's a little more on the funny side.
Is it? Okay, good.
I'm not sure why. I think I may have read something about it in the thread, but it seems like the first book is actually pretty funny, and then later books get a little more serious. Or maybe a little more slow.
Seems like a lot of people have read this and either liked or disliked the characters in it. There's some pretty strong characters. Mm-hmm. Some people are saying, you know, outside of Logan, there is no character I've met that I've immediately liked, and I can see how that might turn off readers. On the other hand, Rochelle says, I really like the depth of the characters and the writing was top-notch. So, you know, something that you might pick up as a supplement. I don't think we're going to make it a regular pick, are we?
No, not for this month at least. Not that I'm aware of.
Have you started reading it yet?
No, I'm reading Perdido Street Station right now, because after I finish Wind Up Girl. And then I've got some Robin Hobb I need to catch up on. And
Robin Hobb.
The last of the Southern Vampire series to read.
Charlaine?
Yeah.
Yeah. That qualifies as fantasy, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. So I've got a lot to read. Mm-hmm.
I mean, Bike Club is recording in the other room right now, so we won't want to touch on their area too much, or it might explode my house.
Yeah, yeah. You know, these multi-podcast households, things can get a little touch and go. And then we have another forum thread from Eric, who started a thread on The Last Man on Earth / post-apocalyptic books.
Love this trope.
And he wanted people to post their favorite three post-apocalyptic survival type stories. So we've got The Road, Earth Abides, Day by Day, Armageddon. And it's a long thread.
Canticle for Leibowitz. Fantastic one. And Sword and Claw series isn't a last man on Earth, but it's the Dying Sun. It's the Chronicles of the Dying Sun. Mm-hmm. So that is one that is very good for that. Just, you know, if you want to think of the human race dying out as part of this trope that they're talking about, that is an excellent one. I've talked about it on Sword and Laser before. I stand behind it. Josh Lawrence is the person to introduce me to that series.
Oh,
and
nice.
A Canticle for Leibowitz is very similar to that.
Mm-hmm. Oryx and Crake, which I read a while back, is also excellent. Margaret Atwood. Earth Abides is another choice. Under the Dome. There's just so many. There's a lot of them out there.
I Am Legend.
I Am Legend, of course.
Yeah.
Was that a comic book?
That has been made into a graphic novel.
It was a novel first?
It was originally a novel. Then it became the Last Man on Earth movie. Then it became Omega Man. Then it became a graphic novel. And then it became the Will Smith movie. And I'm probably missing some other derivations in there as well.
Probably. Well, speaking of post-apocalyptic and all that, we have an email from Simon W. in the UK.
Oh, I forgot to give one of my favorites.
Oh, what?
The Apocalypse Reader.
Well,
an entire short
sounds
story
sounds pretty obvious.
of apocalyptic stories. All right, go ahead.
Jeez-o, bezo. Simon says, Stephen Baxter has a tendency to destroy the Earth in a number of his books, notably Moonseed, Earth wiped out completely starting in the opening scene. Evolution, human evolution from triumph of mammals to the end of humanity. Earth survives, people don't. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, seriously.
Flood, all land gone. Some humans survive.
Well, at least some survive.
And Simon says he's one of my favorite laser authors and well worth reading.
All right, we should do that. That should be one of our next book picks, should be an apocalyptic book. And we could do a vote.
I don't know. Wind Up Girl seems too similar.
No, but that's not apocalyptic. There's plenty of people alive.
I know.
I mean, I'm talking Last Man on Earth.
You're right. All right. We'll think about it.
Peter Hansen wrote in and said, this is a little old, but in catching up on my RSS feed of io9.com, I came across this Ridley Scott. First look at Ridley Scott's Forever War movie. Joe, we were just talking about Joe Haldeman earlier.
Yeah, if it's a concept art piece, and it does look like it could be for the Forever War. This is not confirmed, but apparently Ridley Scott is thinking about working on a Forever War movie, and they may have unearthed some concept art.
He's totally doing it.
I have a feeling like if he does that movie, it's gonna be a lot of the first half of the book and not a whole lot of the second half of the book.
I think you're right. I think that'd be really hard to make all of that book translate, and mm-hmm. that's probably the right choice, is to show the early part of that book, because the second half that's when it gets super trippy and hard to follow visually.
I guess.
I follow it in the book, but I just it would be very difficult to translate that to film.
I suppose. Well,
but
I'd still watch it.
It's pretty cool with the dual winged, like, big birds flying over and the guys running below. Like, mm-hmm. it definitely looks like something I would have imagined mm-hmm. on the ice planet.
Well, we should probably talk about our new book pick, though.
Yes. So this is also, where did we pulled this from? The same list as Wind Up Girl, right?
We did. This is another Cory Doctorow recommendation. And it is Bitter Seeds by Ian Tregellis. And I have already read it, like,
well,
last week.
Aren't you special? I have put it on my Kindle, so we'll see how fast I can read 356 pages, I guess.
Yes, yeah, some people in the forums are already complaining that it's already only available on hardcover. But if you do have an ebook reader, it is available on Kindle and EPUB, so you should be able to find a way that works for you.
We should also read a book next time that is easily available used, because we've done two brand new books in a row now.
You're right. We get so excited.
I know.
Like, we hear
and
about
it's good.
Them.
We should do some brand new books, because we don't want it all to be oldie fogey books like stuff I like.
Well, I'll read the description for you guys on Goodreads. It's 1939. The Nazis have supermen, the British have demons, and one perfectly normal man gets caught in between. Raybould Marsh is a British secret agent in the early days of the Second World War, haunted by something strange he saw on a mission during the Spanish Civil War. A German woman with wires going into her head who looked at him as if she knew him. When the Nazis start running missions with people who have unnatural abilities, a woman who can turn invisible, a man who can walk through walls, and the woman Marsh saw in Spain who can use her knowledge of the future to twist the present, Marsh is the man who has to face them. He rallies the secret warlocks of Britain to hold the impending invasion at bay. But magic always exacts a price. Eventually, the sacrifice necessary to defeat the enemy will be as terrible as outright loss would be.
This is epic, because mm-hmm. it's one of those few books that really combines a good number of sword and laser elements. And the laser elements, not so much science fiction, hard science fiction, but time travel, alternate history, you know, superpowers, along with freaking warlocks.
Yeah. It's a good book. It's a really good book. I got sucked into it very fast. I read it over a couple of days. I mean, I was in Japan, so I had nothing to do but read in my time off.
Uh-huh.
And so I finished Wind Up Girl. I finished the brand new Laurie R. King book, who we'll be interviewing next week, actually.
Yeah, and we will actually not go a month between episodes.
I know, we're going to be awesome like that. And I finished Bitter Seeds, and I think I started something else as well in between that. Oh, Perdido Street Station, I started that in Japan as well. So I polished off like three books on that trip.
Well, I'm off work. I got no excuses, so I'm going to try to see if Bitter Seeds will capture me as well.
I think you'll really like it, especially since we both kind of love alternate history. I think that'll be a good pick for us, at least. Hopefully all the other readers will agree. I've already started a group on Goodreads in the Sword and Laser page. So if you want to start talking about stuff you've picked up on or stuff you've liked in the book so far, things you don't like, feel free to enter it in on the Goodreads page.
And folks, don't forget our partner Sticker Foo. They're still around. FU, Sticker FU. Use the code SWORD1 and get 10% off the stickers at stickerfood.com.
Yep. And if you want to get in touch with us, our email, as always, is theswordandlaser@gmail.com. Our website is swordandlaser.com. And you can visit our groups at Goodreads. And we're up there chatting away about all sorts of different stuff in the sci-fi
really
and fantasy
the
world.
Conversations. They're really good.
I know. I'm happy we made the switch. I'm actually really enjoying Goodreads quite a bit. It makes things a lot easier.
All right, folks. Well, we will see you next week.
Take care. Bye.